Hello and welcome to Dave's Book Talk, and today we're going to talk to Jenny Milchman. I knew I was going to mess up that name, I'm sorry. Her new book, and her first book, is called Cover of Snow, and it's just out from Valentine Books. Hello.
Hi.
I'm looking at this cover. I love this cover. I love it. It's such a creepy cover.
It's creepy, and I thought I wondered how the art department would deal with a book that, it kind of has a lot going on, and I thought they really got it distilled into one single image, which was great.
And the branches, it just creates this air of, I wonder what this book's about.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
This writing is so different than writing that I've seen before. I mean, I would say it's more complex. So I sometimes found myself having to read your sentences two or three times to get the full effect of the meaning.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
And that means that you put a lot of work into it.
Writing, yeah, that's something that I try to pay attention to. It's true. I like painting words on the page, and I like it if you can look at the page and the words almost, put you right in the scene. So I try for that. I doubt I always get it.
Well, you have a great gift for characters. I mean, yes. as we meet the different characters in this book, they're all different, and some are just, they say things and like, well, what did they mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because it makes your mind wander, and you think, well, I wonder what that's all about. Are we gonna figure out what's going on with that? I was watching a movie the other day, and they made a point of mentioning this guy's ring, and I thought, that's going to come into play later in this movie. It was so obvious that somehow. And lo and behold, at the end of the movie, it turned out that this guy was the killer.
Because of the ring.
Because of the ring. Now, I'm not going to tell you the movie because it'll spoil the movie for you.
Right. But the ring was Chekhov's gun, I guess, right?
But I kind of like that. I kind of like that fact that I can see that and see that connection. I said to my friend, I said, there's something going to be with that ring later on. They're mentioning it too blatantly, and it doesn't mean anything else. It has to mean.
Right.
But you have a way of, I mean, this telling, tell me how you got this idea for this book, and tell me the genesis of the idea.
So it's interesting because the idea for it came to me when I just kind of woke up one day with this question in my mind, and the question was, what would make a good man do the worst possible thing he could to his wife? And so first I had to figure out what that worst possible thing would be, and then once I had it, I had to figure out why he did it. But that was really the origin of the novel, and I can't remember. I have no idea why that question occurred to me. It was just with me one day. It hadn't been the day before, and then it was.
That's fascinating to hear that. I mean, I always wonder where ideas come from. And
right.
Harlan Coben, who I know you know, because you're
one of my favorites.
Because you're from New Jersey, too. He's always talking about that what-if situation to start the idea for a novel.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating to hear the things, how novels came into existence. I mean, where the idea came from. I mean, when you think of the idea, do you think of the whole book, or does the book come later on?
Well, I don't know. It's interesting. I think Harlan is brilliant with that what-if, and I would love to know if he thinks of the whole thing. I don't think I do. I think I have maybe a couple of high points along the way that the initial premise leads me to, but I'm really writing the book to find out. And when I'm writing, I feel as if those characters, I'm inhabiting their world. They're not inhabiting mine. And I feel as if it's very real, and that's why actually the revision part of writing is very hard for me, because that's sort of when people start to pick it apart and, put the lock in and put the key in and try to figure out different ways you can envision the one story. And I always feel like, well, no, it happened just the way I put it on the page. I was just kind of writing it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The sense of winter, the seven-month winter. Where in the world is there a seven-month winter? I don't ever want to live there.
I think the Northeast might be experiencing some of that right now.
But thankfully, we only have a three-month winter here.
Right. The Adirondacks can get pretty cold.
Yeah, but that feeling of cold is so prevalent in the novel. I mean, it's almost a whole character in itself in the novel. Were you cold when you were writing the novel?
Well, you know, I was cold when I was writing the novel, and I was cold when I started getting rejections on the novel, and the one day that I was not cold was when we found out it was going to be published. So there was some nice poetry to that. But when you say cold as a character, I love books that do that. I love, you know, William Kent Kruger's books that do that, or Julia Spencer Fleming's,
right.
Lee Child's book 61 Hours, which is set in North Dakota in the winter.
Right.
One of my favorites, because as you say, the cold, it becomes an entity in of itself. And I had a reader at a book signing last night, and she said, I was glad it was cold because cold has more personality than warmth. And I thought that was so fascinating.
How interesting. That's probably true. I never really thought of it like that. Although a lot of, like, if you think about Tennessee Williams plays where it's hot, A Long Hot Summer and things, the heat plays a big part in that, too.
It's so true. Yeah.
There are exceptions, of course. There's exceptions to everything. But you're right. The cold somehow, it is somehow its own little menace. And it's menacing, too. I mean, somebody out in the cold, somebody out dying in the cold is really a horrible thought, you know? That somebody would be all alone and just... And you make a point in the book of saying the woman, you know, that it's very easy to give up and just say, oh, it's over, and not try to get somewhere warm.
Right, and I think that's what happens with freezing to death, actually. And Jack London's To Build a Fire was a very big influence on me. And, you know, we refer to it in our lives, my husband and I, as the To Build a Fire phenomenon, where just that one little thing goes wrong, and it builds upon itself, it snowballs. And in the cold, I think the risk of that happening is just much greater, because you can die if you sit down for too long. You're not getting back up again.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, your cover is what I heard something about the book, and then the cover drew me to it. I mean, and that's important. I often wonder, and I swear one day I'm going to interview a cover artist and ask them where they get these ideas for the cover. I mean, what do they read the book first would be my first question.
I wonder. I think my cover department definitely did read the book. We talked about different details of it. But I wonder if they always read the book, because they have so many of them. I can't imagine they could always read it. So, yeah, that would be a good interview.
Obviously, you're going to, I mean, you've got a major talent for telling a story and characters. And, I mean, you grip this book, and you can't let go almost. It's just so compelling. And I love the way that you number the chapters, but in between the number of chapters, there's chapters of things that are happening that we don't. It's weird. I like the way you did that. It's different though, and that they have titles to them. I think one's called Buried or something. Or
right. And so those are the things that, you know, the woman whose story this is, Nora, doesn't know anything that's going on in those chapters. And so I was sort of trying to give, you know, the reader a greater view of things than Nora herself had, because she was kind of stumbling around in the snow, figuratively and literally.
Poor Nora. I mean, everything's happening to poor Nora.
I know. I made things tough on her.
But it's the poor character. That's all we can. All we want to do is bring her in and out of the cold, you know, and sit her in front of the fire. I kept hoping somebody would have a fireplace, you know.
Good. Yeah.
Now, what are you from, North Jersey or South Jersey?
I guess North Jersey. You know, I'm a terrible person to ask that question to. I really need a little feed, you know, giving me the answers when people ask me things I don't know. But I think I'm from more North Jersey, kind of about 30 miles west of the city.
What do you think it is about you that makes you want to write? I mean, do you just wake up one morning and decide you're going to write, or is it something that you've wanted to do for years?
Always. I would say always. My mom tells the story of me dictating bedtime stories to her when I was 2 years old. I couldn't write. Clearly, I couldn't read, but she would write them down. And I think I always wanted to write. And then, you know, and I studied writing in college and high school. I went to workshops and programs. And when I was in the middle of college, my parents kind of sat me down, asked me the plan. The plan was to write poetry in a log cabin. That was not a good plan. It's very hard to pay the electric bills that way or build yourself a fire. So my parents kind of said, you know, you also really like psychology, and that's a great thing for a writer. You know, you're going to just learn about people. And so I double majored in psychology, and I actually practiced for, you know, more than a decade, but I just always wanted to write. And when I got the chance to come back to it, I took it, and it took me a long time. You know, this was the reason my parents were worried, because it took me 13 years to get published. But
why so long? That seems like a long time.
Well, yeah, it is a long time. You know, I think I wasn't ready for a long time. The first book I wrote was 180,000 words, which corresponds to about 625 pages. That was completely unpublishable. You know, I think I had a lot to learn. And to a certain extent, I think that this was the publisher and editor I was really meant to wind up with, and it took me this long to write a book that, you know, was kind of good enough for them to be interested in. So I think it happened at the right time, but it was a very long time, and, you know, I came close to giving up, certainly, along the way.
What would make you... Well, what kept you going? You talk about in the back of the book about these different people that helped you out along the way.
Right.
And I find that fascinating that there's support that you're... It's sort of like a support group.
Yes. Many support groups, yes.
I mean, I guess I'm just amazed at... your process of getting published seems to be a lot tougher than I hear normally. I mean, it seems like that it happens, but... The way you describe it, it sounds much, much tougher for some reason. So it had to be tougher for you.
I wonder. I mean, I have talked to other writers who kind of list the 10-year mark as a ballpark figure. So I think for some, you know, I certainly don't want to wave the cape of having it the worst. But, I mean, you know, Cover of Snow is my first published novel, as you said, but it's not the first novel I wrote. I wrote 7 other manuscripts that are gathering dust.
7?
And I learned of 7.
Wow.
Yeah. One of them almost sold, so I would say that one probably is publishable as well, but 6 certainly were just learning experiences. And, you know, maybe I'm a slower learner than most people. I don't know. It took me a while. It took me a while to, you know, you talked about the storytelling and the structure. I think that took me a while to get, to learn how to do.
Yeah, but it's very effective, and the shorter chapters build the suspense, I think. I mean, there's little things that happen after each chapter, and I like that. I like the way you did that. But it just makes you want to read the next chapter immediately.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because
I have to remember that.
Because of... Yeah, I think that's very clever, and that keeps the reader... I mean, there's no way you can finish... You can start this book and not finish it. Just because you have to know what would make this... What would make, like you said, all these different things, the scenario in the beginning, I got to figure out what's going on here. I have to know what's going on here.
Right.
That sense of well, I can't go on with life unless I know how this ends up.
Right. Yeah.
More so than watching a TV show. I mean, I've watched many a TV show, and they'll start out, and it'll be interesting, and I'll think, I don't really care what happens at the end.
Me too, yes. It's better than TV. I might have to write that down and hang it up above my desk.
Right, exactly. Well, the problem with TV is a lot of the characters aren't fleshed out very well, so you don't really know them that well. We know a lot about Nora, and we find out a lot about the characters. And the autistic character is one of the most fascinating characters in the book.
And I loved him.
I love him too, and I thought to myself, I've got to ask the author why autistic character, where that came from, I think he adds a lot to the book, and of course nobody takes him seriously in the town because he's autistic.
Right.
I guess as a society we kind of brush off autistic people as not really being dependable, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a shame, but it's it is what it is. What can you do? You know, we can love them, but we don't always trust them.
Right.
They know
and
what,
I think we do that to lots of groups of people in our society, you know, maybe to our own, all of our own detriment. So, yeah.
Now, how many words is this book? Do you know?
This book, yeah, I do know. It's about 94,000.
94. Now, does Valentine say to you, we need it to be about 94,000? I mean, do they give you that figure, or do you?
No, they didn't. And in fact, they've been, you know, it's just amazing because you don't necessarily expect this in this day and age, but they are so committed to kind of the artistic process of the novel and just not putting it on anybody else's timetable or number count or anything like that. So, no, they really didn't. I think that's just where the story had to end. And my next book actually is probably slated to be a little bit longer, but 180,000 words, which I mentioned with my very first unpublishable novel, is really, you know, unless you're Stephen King or somebody brilliant, I think probably too long. So.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, well, you take a novel like Stephen King's 11/22/63. It's a fascinating book. And after you're done it doesn't seem like it's too long.
I mean, it's true.
But it all depends on how well the story is told. And
yeah.
when you read that, you really start to realize how good a storyteller Stephen King really is. And
he's a master. He really is.
That's what I got from your book. This idea that this woman can really tell a story. She's really, really good with characters. And just when you think you know where it's going, you really don't. And the characters say something weird, and you're right thrown into the mystery once again. You know, like, now what does that mean? And what does that picture mean? And you know, you start to question everything, which is interesting because, I mean, some books you read and you're like, oh, this is so predictable. You know, and you know, you can tell where the story's going a lot of times, but this one's not like that. It's just very unusual. I mean, and I'm getting flashes of the story in my head now, just thinking back on some of the, it's almost like you paint the pictures so well of the story.
Thank you.
I mean, have you ever been artistic as far as drawing is concerned?
Oh, no. I am so unartistic. In fact, that's why I felt, you know, I was so glad to have a cover team, because I knew I would never be able to do anything with it myself. No, I am not art. No. My husband sometimes complains, you know, when I'm writing and I'm kind of lost in my own head and can't, and I say, look, I can write a novel, I can kind of raise our children, and sometimes I cook a pretty good dinner, but other than that, I'm not good for very much.
Oh, no, that can't be true.
No, it by and large is, you know, there are some important things in there. There's the raising the children. But, you know, I have very, you know, limited, I think, you know, I can't read a map, no, and I am not artistic visually at all. But that's okay, I know my limitations.
Now, I was telling you before the interview about my friend who, when I texted her, was reading the same book I was reading this book. That's absolutely a true story, I'm not making that up. I almost fell over when she said, I'm on page 160, and at the time I think I was on page 60 or 70 or something. So I was way behind her.
Yeah. Did she give anything away?
No, and she didn't give anything away either, and I haven't talked to her, so I assume she probably was up all night reading it. Poor woman probably got no sleep because of you.
Well, my apologies, but my thanks.
And you know what? You know what's really weird? I've got the bookmark I was using in my book as a picture of two kids walking through the snow.
Really? Oh, I want to see that bookmark.
Isn't that weird? I mean, it's like an ad for the apartment complex I live in, but it's got two kids walking through the snow. I mean, how
it could almost be the movie poster.
Yeah, how appropriate.
Yeah, fantastic.
I mean, it's like I'm getting really creeped out. I mean, there's too many coincidences. What were you like growing up? And were you a skater growing up?
A skater, did you say?
Yes.
No, but I was weird growing up. I mean, I was drawn to things that other kids weren't, and on play dates, which we didn't call play dates back then, I would find the bookshelf and kind of sit down in front and read as much of the books as I could. You know, I was not a skater, but I was just kind of, you know, wanting to fit in, but not really fitting in. And I think that's probably a big theme in the book, you know, maybe not one of the more obvious themes, but Nora's a real outsider there, and I think being an outsider is probably, you know, something that dominates a lot of the stories I tell.
I mean, and it's also fascinating, Brendan's mother, a very, very fascinating woman.
Yeah.
Somebody I'm glad was not my mother.
Right.
But, and that's what you do so well. You take each character and they're all, it's so hard to have characters that are different. I mean, I've read authors where, you know, you really can't tell one character from the other. Necessarily. Yeah. And the heroine, I'm thinking of one author in particular, I'm not going to mention their name, who every book writes the same woman in peril kind of thing. But each woman does not really have their own distinctive qualities about them enough that I can say, well, I remember this one from this book, and they all kind of blend together after a while.
Right.
So how did you do that so well with this book, make Nora such an interesting and real person?
Gosh, I don't know. And you're kind of striking fear in my heart as I'm thinking about my next book and wondering if I'll be able to live up to this wonderful read. But I think it's very hard. I feel sympathy for the Woman in Jeopardy, you know, novelist, because I think, you know, I think in some ways a debut novel, you're putting your stamp on things. That's the kind of thing that you do. But if you go on to tell similar stories, I wonder how you do make them unique. But one thing I would say is that, you know, the people feel very real to me in my books, and they feel as if they have very lush backstories and histories. And so I think if you can tap into those parts of your characters, they're not going to be overlapping because they really are just different people. You know, in the same way that you and I would not be overlapping. We come to things with our own unique points of view, and I think digging into that as a writer, you know, for me, that's where the joy lies. But then some writers are better at other things, you know, maybe structuring a, you know, a disaster or an action scene or, I don't know, guns. Every child is so great with guns.
Right. I mean, I was talking earlier about your sentences and how there were a couple sentences I didn't quite, they were so long, and I went back and looked at them. I still didn't understand some of them. I don't know why. I don't know whether I was just missing the point. You have a way of telling it, and the sentence that I read, I'll think, I've got to read that again. I mean, I was saying that to you before, that it's sometimes hard to know exactly everything you're trying to say in the sentence. You know? But I like that challenge, and yet it confuses me at times, too. But
that's interesting. I'm going to have to send you my manuscript so that you can point me to those sentences.
Well, I know there's one on page 24 that I need to ask you about. But
okay. All right. Please, feel free.
And I thought to myself, you know, I don't know whether I should bring that up to you. But, you know, as a reader, you know, sometimes you notice things that you don't think you're going to notice. I mean, people will say to me, well, did you notice in this book that this was... And then I'll say, no, I didn't notice at all because I was so involved with the story.
Right.
But then I'll be reading a book, and all of a sudden I'll see a word that's misspelled, and it'll make me terribly angry.
Oh, gosh, I know.
And now, thankfully, there's no misspelled words in your book. But
isn't
not
that
I saw...
That's the production department.
But that's so important, and yet, because right in the middle of reading a book, it can ruin the book for me.
Really, yeah. Some people are more sensitive to that than others. Yeah, I would agree. It does bother me.
Are you a perfectionist, would you say?
Yeah, probably. But just in the things, as I said, that I care about. You know, it doesn't trouble me at all that I wasn't sure what part of New Jersey I was.
Right, and if you burn the roast, you can be forgiven, right?
Right, right. But the book, yeah, it would. And I usually do turn in pretty clean copy, I would say, but my publisher just also has a great production department that caught things I never, you know, never would have seen myself. And it's interesting when you talk about a sentence that kind of hung you up. That's the kind of thing that I would not, you know, as a writer, you can't notice all that stuff because you're too close to it.
Right.
And that's why I think you need, you know, a great team.
But, you know, you have such a huge amount of talent. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind you know what you're doing. You are a great storyteller. That doesn't mean you can't have a sentence that I can't figure out.
All right. No, sure. And, you know, and the truth is that once a book is published, you sort of realize there's no perfect book, you know, that no matter how hard you labor over it and slave over it, there's always going to be things that you look back and you're like, oh, I would have done something different, you know.
But, have you ever read a writer that did that, would write a sentence and you couldn't quite understand what the sentence meant?
Well, definitely all the writers that I read in college, you know, kind of reading the Russians and the Victorians, I would have to tease out those sentences for so long. But, you know, I think there are some contemporary writers that just do amazing things with prose and, you know, almost play tricks with it. Stuart O'Nan is somebody who, you know, writes these very kind of spare sentences.
Is he the one that writes the Lobster book?
The one I'm thinking of is Still Missing, which is about a girl and she disappears from her hometown. And
I think there's a book about a night at the Lobster or something. Stuart O'Nan. If it's the same Stuart O'Nan I'm thinking of.
There could be.
There's something about a lobster. Now I'm going to have to look it up, but that's what I remember. I don't know. I could be really wrong. But it's interesting how, I mean, I think of some of my favorites, like Richard Russo, who's just brilliant. I mean, absolutely brilliant. And I've actually talked to him, and I think to myself, it's such a thrill to talk to a writer knowing how good they really are. And you feel like you're a brush with greatness, you know? How do you do it? You want to say, how do you do it? So I would say to you, how do you tell such an interesting story all the way through? How that must be very difficult to do.
I mean, the interesting part is the part I think that I find easy. The part that I find more difficult is what you're saying. You're trying to read it as a reader and see what's going to be clear and what's not. But the interesting part, I if you're interested, then I hope it's because I was really interested. You know, when I was writing the book, I wanted to figure out what had happened in this town. Why did it have secrets that went back so far? What could they have seen fit to cover up? And I was just gripped by that. So if anybody else reading it becomes gripped, maybe they're just, you know, maybe I was just able to translate that a little bit.
Why don't you describe a little bit of the plot of the book without giving too much away? So people who haven't read it, people are saying, well, tell me what the book's about.
Right. So Nora Hamilton lives in the Adirondack Mountains in New York State, and it's the middle of winter, and she wakes up one morning and finds her police detective husband missing from their bed. And something has happened to him. She actually finds out fairly quickly, but that's really when the secrets start to roll. And she has to, I would say, lay bare the secrets of the town she lives in, but also her own. And those are secrets she didn't even know she had.
Wow. Now, see, that's better than I would have done. I probably would have given away. People out there have to understand, it's so difficult not to give away something important from the book. I have to struggle with it all the time. And I'm sure over the years I've given away something I probably shouldn't have or said a little too much, but I don't remember giving away too much. But it's so easy to give away too much.
It is.
And
it is. You're actually doing amazingly. I have had many interviews where, boom, it's given away right away. And it's hard to know, because it's hard to know what the author intended to be a secret. But I think this is a novel filled with a lot of secrets, so you could almost say
right.
anything.
I doubt you'll get another interview who will tell you about a sentence on page 24 they didn't understand.
I don't know. I'm going to go look at page 24.
But there was one chapter, and I not more than one, but one chapter that really got to me, and I tried to remember what chapter it was. Now I told myself I was going to remember. I think it was the chapter. It may have been the chapter with where we meet the autistic guy's mother.
Yeah.
That was really a wonderful chapter, and I don't know what number it was. I want to say like 29 or something, but I'm not sure that's right. That's what's sticking in my head, but
yeah.
There are certain chapters that authors write that I think, wow, that was magical.
Hmm.
And I know I've done that with other authors. I can't remember that. I couldn't tell you what chapters they were now because I've forgotten. But, you know, sometimes you just hit it exactly on the head. And have you ever read a book and all of a sudden you just realize, I really love this book and I don't want it to end?
Oh, all the time. Not all the time, but yes, it has happened, and it's so memorable when it does. It's such a great part of life.
I felt that way about Gone Girl.
Yeah.
I felt that. I also felt that way about Louise Penny's, I forget which one. I'm not sure. Almost all of hers, I think.
Yeah.
Also, the Ice Princess series, which you probably haven't read.
I haven't.
Which, it's one of my favorite series right now by Camilla Läckberg. I don't know if you've ever heard of her.
Yeah.
She's a Swedish writer, and she's brilliant.
Right.
Absolutely brilliant. And you would like her because she's psychological, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that way last night about your book, that I didn't want it to end, and I was kind of sad it was going to end.
Oh.
Because I was just enjoying, you know, and here's the thing, and I don't know if you've ever felt this way, but sometimes I'll read a mystery and I'll think, I don't want this to end because I'm enjoying the mystery. I don't know if I want to know the ending yet.
Right. I don't know if I want to know all the answers, yeah.
Right, and that's how I felt about this book at one point. I thought, I don't know if I really want to know. I want to keep playing along with the puzzle. The puzzle's so interesting. Now, what's really happening here, and what's with this police chief, and you know, and what's with this town, and why is everybody acting so weird?
Right.
And you know, and I didn't know if I wanted to know right away. I wanted to play it out and see. You know, do you ever feel that way about books?
I think that, yes, I definitely do. And when you do, you know, that's just, you know, I find myself rereading the sentences, not necessarily for always the same reason, but just because, yeah, you want to stay in that world. And you need to slow down the pace. And, you know, you're reading to find out, but you're also trying to not read to find out.
I love your dialogue. I look ahead at the chapters and I think, oh, please let there be more dialogue in this chapter. I love your dialogue. I mean,
thank you.
And I don't say that about a lot of authors. Some authors are better at it than others. And I mean, look at Ken Bruin, is it? He's all dialogue.
Well, I haven't read him.
That's an Irish author, and he's just complete dialogue, which sometimes I think it's too much, and sometimes I read him and I think, no, that's pretty interesting. But
well, and it must be because you get the dialect or the tongue coming through.
Right. I mean, sometimes it works for me and sometimes it doesn't. It depends on the
right.
book.
Yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
I really enjoy it. Like during a trial, if there's a murder trial, that can be really interesting.
Yeah.
And really.
I read that. Yeah. Had great trial dialogue this year.
Really compelling. And have there been any offers to do a movie of this book?
Well, so it's interesting. I do have a film agent, and she has told me that female lead movies are very difficult in Hollywood. Difficult to the point of almost not getting made.
Why?
So I do not. Hollywood is a strange kind of beast. And, you know, if you think New York publishing is difficult, or if I do, apparently Hollywood is just...
You mean if Nora was a man, you'd have an easier time selling it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
I guess the logic behind it is that the primary movie-going audience is teenage boys, and they're not going to be interested. And after that, when you think of a couple going to a movie, apparently the man usually says, okay, honey, let's go see the latest Avenger movie or whatever. And, you know, then the woman says, but I really want to see Cover of Snow. And he says, well, you could see that with your friends. So it's going to make it very difficult in Hollywood. Difficult to impossible. But my film agent does think it would be a good TV movie, so she is exploring that line of stuff.
It would be a good Lifetime movie.
Right. That's what she thought. So, who knows? I mean, you know, it's not something I can really think about.
Or AMC.
I think
it would fit good on AMC. AMC's got such creepy stuff on now.
If you meet anybody who is interested, please send them my way. Because I would love to, you know, I think that's always a writer's dream, because I think when we write it, we see it almost as a movie in our head. So it would be neat to see what somebody really talented, you know, with that medium did with it.
I'm trying to picture what color Nora's hair is, and I don't remember if you described it or not.
Chestnut.
It's chestnut. So she's reddish.
Yeah.
There aren't very many red actresses out there today, are there?
You know, there's Julianne Moore, who I just love.
What about Scarlett Johansson? Is she ready?
Right? Yeah, or she could go that way, I'm sure. Yeah, I think there's people.
Yeah, Julianne Moore could pull it off for sure.
I think so. But, you know, I'm nobody in Hollywood, so.
But it's interesting that you said that about the women not being into, if it's a woman main character. I never thought of that before. And boy.
Did I?
It just blows my mind that, you know.
I know. And it's a kind of radical change. You know, it used to be, I don't know if you remember those movies based on, were they James Patterson novels with Alex Cross and Ashley Judd? So those did great. But when I mentioned that to my film agent, she gently told me that I was talking about 15 years ago. And I said, you know, I might be a little bit stuck in my movie going 15 years ago, you know. Before the kids came along and we could go to all the movies.
And that's what irritates me sometimes about movies, that they put one actor and they give them the same kind of role for every movie they're ever in.
Right.
And it's just,
I know.
I know because it sells and they can make a lot of money off it, but after a while it gets very tiresome if they're doing the same things in each movie. If they're the same kind of, sometimes they're like, you know, I don't know. But it just irritates me sometimes that I want to see a different movie each time.
I think so, too. And I think a lot of, you know, audience members feel that way, and I don't know why those dollars aren't quite coming across, but I agree with you, and I think that, you know, yes, put something different on the screen and, you know, really give it substance. What I get annoyed about with movies is I don't feel there's that much story to them these days.
Now, you had talked about almost giving up at one point.
Yep.
What stopped you from giving up? I'm curious. I mean, were you really that close to giving up, and what made you keep going?
I think I was very close to giving up. I really have to say I was. And the thing that kept me going was, first of all, just my interest in the stories. I wanted to keep talking, you know, to the reader, and I wanted to have this relationship that, you know, Stephen King talks about an unread story as an unclosed circle. And I think I felt that. I felt that I had these stories to tell, and until they found readers, I would not be complete. So that was one thing. But I would also say, you know, you mentioned our little interruption, for which I deeply apologize, but I would say that my family really kept me from giving up. And my husband used to say to me, no plan B. You know, I would say, I can't do this anymore. This is never going to happen. He said, you have to do it, because there's no plan B, which is a Will Smith quote, getting back to the movies. But, you know, so I think a combination of the community that you mentioned, you know, I mentioned several different groups in my acknowledgments, and they kept me going. So the people in my life, and also just that compulsion to connect with readers and the feeling that I wasn't finished until that had happened.
It's interesting in life what will happen if you don't give up. I mean, there are people that try and try and try and never get anywhere, and then all of a sudden they try one more time and everything works, you know. And
well, yeah, and that's the thing.
And how much, I mean, it's so much easier to give up than to really, you know, suffer through it, whatever you're suffering through, to get to where you want to get. I mean, whether it be depression or whatever you're going through.
Yeah, and there was. I mean, there were really bleak times. I still remember a time when, you know, at a certain point, what happened was I began going to author events, and I wanted to see authors and kind of get to know. You know, you mentioned talking to them, and, you know, I wanted to do a small little fraction of that myself and get to know what maybe authors knew that I didn't know, and so I started going to author events. And I can remember a time when my kids were real little, and one was sick for the first time in his life, but there was this big author event, and I had already left for it, and I couldn't really get back, you know, very soon. And I drove through the snow and, you know, went and met this author and feeling guilty the whole time. I was leaving my sick child. And I think that was one of the lowest moments, actually, when I just sat there in my car waiting for the, you know, event to start and thinking, why am I doing this and how selfish is this to be going after my own dream? And, you know, there were those times. And
it isn't really selfish because it means a lot to you. And it, I mean, that's, you really wanted this to happen. And it,
I did.
I mean, even if something should happen to you 50 years from now, at least you've tried, and now you've succeeded. Now you have a major novel out there.
Well, I mean, and I do think that's a great message, really, generally speaking, that, yeah, in 50 years, when you look back, you know, somebody said this, and you just said it, you know, are you going to be sorry about what happened, or are you going to be sorry that you never tried to see what could happen?
Right, and you did, and you're a major success. I mean, this is... You go into a bookstore and there's your book. It's sitting in front of you. It's got to be a surreal thing.
It is the most surreal thrill I can imagine. It really is.
What was the reaction when they had the ARCs out? I mean, I'm curious what people said. Was there a lot of good reaction to the ARCs?
I think there was. I mean, I wasn't as connected to that process because, you know, my publisher was really doing that. But I think, you know, there were some good reviews kind of coming out and, you know, some not so good reviews. And certainly the booksellers really embraced this book, and that was a wonderful thing. And it was nominated, it was chosen, I guess, as an Indie Next pick, which is the booksellers.
Oh, they did take it. That's good. I was going to ask you about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So, you know, I would say the booksellers were just huge supports of this. And then, you know, there were things like, you know, Amazon started including it in their email blast before it was published. So, you know, I think I sort of felt like, well, maybe people really are going to read this thing. But you never know. And, you know, such insecure times. And
you know, competition. I mean, there's a lot of competition.
Oh, so much. Yeah.
I mean, and people are, when people look at a name and they say, oh, I know that name, I'll buy that book, you know, and there is that. There is a lot of that. I mean, to buy a book from an, I mean, you've got a really great book, and I think people will buy it because it is that good, and they'll be taken by the cover, like I said, and it really is a compelling read, and you'll probably be as scared as I was last night just reading this. It's like, I really was. I was getting frightened. And funny thing is, I went online and I saw this thing about Otto Penzler, and he says the 7 books that will scare the you-know-what out of you.
Oh, what are they?
And I...
I have to look that up.
And I think they were all ghost stories, though. There was a book one time called Ghosts. It was written by Noel Hine. Oh, my goodness, that thing scared the crap out of me.
Oh, wow.
And it was just, I don't know what it was about that book. It's hard to get that book now. I think it's out of print, but boy, that really just really got to me. That I mean, some books really get to you.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
and they stay with you.
Mm-hmm.
They stay with
yeah.
you. I mean, we're back to Stephen King again, The Shining, and, you know, just yeah. how compelling that was. I mean, you can still see the little kid running through the snowbanks, and it's...
Yeah. Yeah. I was weaned on Stephen King, and yeah, he just scared me.
And in your book, I'm in my mind, I'm seeing Nora driving, you know, and I can't I don't want to describe too much about what she was doing, but I just see her driving through the snowdrifts, and you know, and I see that playing through my head. I see a lot of the scenes from your book in my head just playing out. It's interesting the way that is. I mean, why do we do that? Why? And I see that. Well, I can't say that, but I see a lot of things I can't bring up.
I know what to see, yeah. Well, you know, and I think we all have a need to be scared, maybe because life, you know, life is scary, and we live with a lot of unfinished circumstances in our life, and I think one of the things that a suspense novel can do, or a horror novel, is write the world at the end. Not even necessarily give you a happy ending, but just an understandable ending, and so I think... You know, when characters are scared, maybe we identify with them because we hope that they're going to triumph and then we triumph a little bit too.
You know what? Speaking about TV, though, when I watch a show and something traumatic happens to one of the characters.
Or
I should say, when somebody gets murdered, when they show their wife or their kids or something, I think they're not really all that upset. I said, that's just fake. You know, it's just
right.
So fake. And that really gets to me. Like, I think a lot about the TV show Bones. That happens a lot on that show. And they'll talk to the wife whose husband's been murdered. She's really not all that upset.
Yeah.
I think that's so fake. But, I mean, in your book, Nora is very, very emotional about it. I mean, and I think she's more in shock. Wouldn't you say she's in shock in most of the book?
I do think she's in shock. And, you know, one of the reviewers mentioned that her feelings were as frozen as the landscape, something like that. And I think you are in shock. I mean, if you think about the book, you know, it really takes place in maybe 6 or 7 weeks. And that's not enough time to come through a shock like she received. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
I mean, and even though she's able to do a lot for being in shock. But there are points where she does break down, you know. It seems the photographs seem to be the trigger for her. I mean, anytime she sees a photograph, she's triggered by an emotion, it seems like.
That's a good point.
And I think it's funny we should mention photographs, because Harlan Coben does so much with photographs. He's very much into, it's very interesting the way he uses computer images to build stories with. And if you think about a lot of his stories, they often have to do with pictures.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
And people disappearing, and people, are they really dead, or what's going on?
Or screenshots or photos right on the computer. Yeah, absolutely. True.
I was just about to give something away in your book. I'm glad I shut my mouth. But
you're doing great. You're doing absolutely
But there's a point in the book where I think to myself, oh, my gosh, I don't really know if so-and-so is so-and-so. I can't really say what I'm thinking, but, you know, I think you know what I'm trying to say. But
yeah, I do.
And
actually, the thing that you're picking up on will come to pass in a later book as well. It comes back to that.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, we're being so cryptic. Well, so Cover of Snow is set in Weedskill, which is a fictional town in the Adirondacks. And I always pictured having a series of Weedskill novels where you would see the town through the prism of different characters' eyes. You know, you wouldn't necessarily. It's not that horrible.
Are you saying this is going to happen?
Well, yeah, I think I am saying it's going to happen.
Really?
The next novel will be a Weedskill story, but it's not. You're not going to see Nora again. I mean, her story is really told. But I do think that, even just in light of the conversation we're having, you know, future novels down the road may play with pieces that, you know, were set up in this first novel, Cover of Snow.
Oh, so that's why. I can't even say more than I think you know what I was going to say, but I'm being more cryptic than you now, but I can't say what I want to say.
Yeah, you're doing great. No, you're doing really great. I'm going to have to point to this as an interviewer who's able to keep as many secrets as the past.
I'm telling you, it's very hard. And if you're listening right now, go out and read this book, because you're going to love it. But because you have to know everything we're talking about, and you'll understand completely after you read it where I was going with this. But
right.
Well, I wanted to mention that town name, by the way, Weedskill. Where did it come in your mind?
I mean, it is, so there. You asked about, what was the other name you asked? The question that you asked about, and I had no idea what made that question, what would make a good man do the worst thing he could. I don't know where that came from. I don't know where Weedskill came from. And there's also a dog in the book, the Black Lab, and his name is Weekend. And that's the only thing that I can tell you where it came from, which was that I was on a beach with some friends, and we were doing our, you know, beach party thing, very relaxed and laid back, and a guy arrived with his dog, and I heard him call, Weekend, hey, Weekend, and I was like, that is a great name for a dog, and he said, what? And I said, Weekend, what a great name for a dog, and he looked at me and said, my dog's name is James, and I said, oh, I heard you say Weekend, I guess I made that up, but I knew then that I would name a dog Weekend.
How weird is that?
Yeah, but I don't know where the name Weedskill came from. There's a line in the book that says, you know, the name was pronounced as if you were killing weeds, and I thought there was a certain menace to the name, but I can't say where I got it.
This just gets creepier and creepier.
Yeah, creepier. I'm a kind of creepy person, I think.
You really believe that?
I'm nice when you talk to me, but I think there's a, you know, I think I live, you talked about that before and after line and that line you cross and the what if premise, you know, and I think I spend a lot of time in my head on the other side of that line thinking what if, and yeah, I would say that gives me a kind of, maybe not a creepy dimension, but certainly a scared dimension.
Well, now that you've published your first novel, what would you say bothers you the most about writing? Is there anything that bothers you? Is there anything that gets on your nerves while you're writing?
Well, I love writing. I'm not a good person to ask. I love it so much. I just can't believe I get to do it. But I do get hung up on the revising.
The revising is what gets you.
Yeah. I stomp around the house and, you know, mutter and curse everybody who would dare to pick apart one little comma. And then, you know, that usually passes in a matter of days. And then I sit down and I think, thank goodness whoever it is read this novel because it was whatever. And then I'm very hard on myself. So, you know, I switch back and forth.
You should talk to Wendy Corsi Stubbs. She doesn't do any rewrites.
No rewrites?
Yes, that is true.
Wow.
She told me that herself. I assume she's still the same way to this day. But
wow.
she does not do rewrites.
And that's
maybe you could learn.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
You could learn a trick somewhere.
I kind of think it's my karmic destiny to have to do rewrites, that there's something in them for me to... I have to get over myself and learn to... But that's impressive. Wow. I have to look at one of Wendy's... I recall reading several of hers. That's impressive that she pulled that off.
Well, that's what she told me. I assume she's still... Usually when writers start on a pattern, they don't usually change.
I mean,
And I
wonder if does she rewrite as she goes along, or is she really just out of the gate?
She didn't indicate to me that she did. Now, it's been years since she told me that. No, I don't know the way she is now, but I just found that interesting. Yeah, I think you should get with her and see what's going on, see how she does it.
Yeah, I'll ask her her secrets.
There's got to be a secret somewhere. Obviously, she knows what it is.
Yeah.
Well, we've just about run out of time. It's been wonderful to talk to you. Cover of Snow is the new book. Jenny Milchman is the name. You're laughing because you know I wanted to say Milkman again.
Well, I'm not going to tell the story behind mispronouncing my name, but let's just say you've done quite well, and this interview has been wonderful, David, so thank you very, very much.
Well, it's been great fun for me, too. And it's out from Ballantine Books and all your store. The cover of Snow is the title again. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.